This is Where We Live. I'm John Dankosky. I'm sitting in my car at the confluence of Route 44 and 202 in Canton, Connecticut, just outside the village of Collinsville. Why, you may ask? Well, today we're going to take you on a bit of the journey I make every day and talk about how suburban sprawl and chain stores have changed my commute and the commute of many Connecticut residents over the last few decades. We're starting here because, well, because it's my mental halfway point in the drive that I make every morning from Winsted. It's not really halfway, mind you. We're still about 14 miles from work, but it's where the drive changes, and not necessarily for the better. The first leg of my commute to get here takes me from the old factory town I live in, through fields and woods, and along the scenic Farmington River. It's not uncommon for me to see pheasants and foxes, turkeys and deer, bears and bald eagles. I even saw a moose once. There's Commerce, too. The charming center of New Hartford that I go through has a few mostly locally owned businesses. There are several places to buy antiques, a kayak store, and a handful of places to get flies for fishing. The last few hundred yards to get me here take me between a rushing section of river popular with inner tubers in the summer and a small organic farm on the other side of the road. Right after that, everything changes. Two lanes turn into four. The pace of traffic picks up, as does the number of storefronts. Local businesses, to be sure, but increasingly a mix of chain stores, strip malls, and big parking lots. Joining us today is Tom Condon, deputy editorial page editor at The Current. He's a student of sprawl, and he's joined us on these conversations before. Good to see you, Tom.
Thank you, John. Happy to be here.
Tom, before we get started, why don't you tell me what would have been here before all this stuff is here? I mean, it seems like the sprawl has been around for a while. I've lived out in Winsted since around 1999, and it has changed quite a bit. But what used to be here before this got built up?
In the 1950s and before, we were looking at woods, farms, you know, an occasional little store, but mostly a very rural landscape. And in fact, the publisher of The Current in the 60s was one of the big advocates for widening Route 44.
Oh.
It was Colonel John Reitmeier who lived out this way. And making what was very common at the time, but what we now know to have been a mistake, when you widen roads, they simply fill up again, as we'll soon see.
Yes. Well, exactly. They fill up again, and the wider you make them, people don't feel scared. They drive very fast.
Oh,
they,
yeah.
they drive somewhat dangerously.
Yeah, indeed. Somebody once said that widening a road to solve traffic congestion is like loosening your belt to solve obesity. and it really is. These four-lane arterials are really tough roads because people drive like they're limited access highway when they're not.
Well, and that's one of the reasons we wanted to have you along for this conversation, because what has happened is with all of these small little storefronts and these strip malls, it seems like every couple hundred feet, there's a new place to get on and off the roads. And with people driving not the speed limit, 40 miles an hour, but more like 50, sometimes 60 miles an hour, those on and offs can be very dangerous.
Oh,
people
absolutely.
Are turning left. I'm always seeing accidents.
Sure. Well, for one thing, look at this intersection we're just leaving now. This was hugely, in my view, over-designed by the DOT to encourage speed. This is a really tough road to try to bike on. Trying to encourage more, you know, the more roads be made bike friendly. Boy, this is a challenge.
Well, we're going past the first little bit of sprawl. The old Canton Village here, this is a development that was made some years ago. There's a McDonald's in there now. A lot of smaller buildings. It seems to probably have been in place since the 1960s. But once you get past there, Tom, now all of a sudden it's storefront. Lots
oh, yeah.
of ins and outs. A few chain stores, but it just seems all crammed down to this old green, this town green of Canton. It's just really isolated, left by itself.
Right, really is. You know, it's just, you know, a little spot of green, you know, in amidst, you know, a really commercial sprawl.
And I have to stop because we're coming up on the first Dunkin' Donuts of this part of the drive. I have to say, even though I made my drive from Winsted to New Hartford sound so bucolic, indeed, I do pass two Dunkin' Donuts on the way, one in Winsted, one in New Hartford. And here's my third Dunkin' Donuts on my commute. We're going to see another one just a mile down the road. Well, here's what I'm going to do. I might do something dangerous as we drive here on our tour down Route 44 with Tom Condon of the Hartford Current. I'm John Dankosky. This is Where We Live. And today it's Where We Drive. Tucker Ives and I are taking a drive down my morning commute to take a look at sprawl and take a look at some of the chain stores that have been built up here over the years. And there's two big developments right here, Tom, that we got to talk about. Yep. The first one's the one on the left. I'm going to pull into this parking lot. It's a CVS pharmacy, and it's built in the sort of style that we build in a lot now. It looks old New England-y, right? It's not an ugly-looking box store. It's supposed to be a little bit more architecturally pleasant, but there used to be something else here. What was here?
Absolutely. There was a 18th century farmstead that had been built by one of the founders of the town. Beautiful, white, old colonial farmhouse, grounds around it. It was a lovely little patch of green, and it has been sacrificed, you know, for a big box CVS with a drive-through. The scourge of urban design, drive-throughs.
Well, and of course, this is a place you couldn't really walk. It's built to be driven into, maybe even driven through.
Route 44 is totally dedicated to supporting the car culture, absolutely. You never see anybody walking here unless their car broke down.
Well, and it is, as Tom was describing the old farmstead here, you know, for years before this was built, they'd left one remnant of this house, an old chimney, was left, this old brick chimney, and we were always wondering, when we see that chimney come down, we know something's coming, and it's probably going to be a CVS.
Yeah, well, no, right, you were.
Yeah.
yeah, they went from, architecturally, they went from a bland box to a bland peaked roof.
Yeah.
You could call that progress or not. There's nothing inherently wrong with CVS's. It makes every place look like every place else. It ultimately supports a kind of development that isn't sustainable over a long period. I mean, we can't just keep packing people into cars with the climate change that is going on now. I mean, we need to think a little differently, and we have it.
Here we are. We're making a turn. We're right across the road from the CVS. Explain where we are right
now. Oh, we're in the Shoppies. the Shops of Farming Valley is a big mall that was built about a dozen years ago on the site of a lovely old golf club, golf course, the Canton Golf Club. And what you have here is a classic example of what's wrong with Connecticut's over-reliance on property taxes. Canton, at the time, was one of the smallest towns in the state with a self-contained school system. Well, schools are expensive. And so town leaders made a choice to give up the aesthetic and the pleasing recreational asset of the golf club, which was not a huge taxpayer, and replace it with a mall. A lot of stores like the stores that are just down the street, which is a bigger taxpayer. This is what happens across the state. The state is so reliant on property tax revenue that it encourages questionable or sometimes bad land use decisions.
Just down the road, it changes over from Canton into the town of Simsbury, then quickly into Avon. They're all sort of a confluence, and a lot of this sort of construction tends to be right on the borders of towns. You're using the space right up to the border so that you're collecting the tax revenue, but a lot of the inherent problems that happen are the other guy's problems.
Sure, the traffic goes to the next town, and you collect the money. Those malls out at Buckland are in Manchester and South Windsor, a classic example. They built the first one right up to the South Windsor town line, and South Windsor got all the traffic, and Manchester got all the money. So then South Windsor built its own mall, and now the traffic is just hopeless.
Well, the battle of the malls. We tore through Route 44 in Canton here with Tom Conan of the Hartford Courant. I'm John Dankowski. This is where we live. We'll start driving again. We're here at these Shoppies, as Tom calls them. We're looking around. There's a big Dick's Sporting Goods, an American Eagle Outfitters, Barnes & Noble Booksellers. Who knows how much longer that'll be here, Tom, because the big booksellers, there's a Borders down the road that closed up. When this got built, I'd been living out here. I'd played at this old golf course.
Sure.
And I hated to see it go, but I have to say, look, this isn't all bad. There's a lot of stores in here I like. There's places, I mean, I'll tell you what, we're going to go around the corner to Chipotle, and I'd like to pick up a burrito. But there's a balance here, right?
I understand. No, you know, the story of big box stores is that people like what's inside them but don't like what's outside them. They have, the big box merchandising models have, you know, they figured out how to get stuff less expensively. Now, sometimes there's a cost in collapsed factories in Bangladesh and what have you, but they've nonetheless figured out how to do it, and people like it, and people shop there.
Well, I'll say that the whoops that you heard Tom say before, it was almost a little traffic mishap, because in these malls that seem to be just winding roads with no rules, there are no traffic rules really, so we're almost running into each other constantly.
It's like the NBA playoffs. If you got if you got position, you move.
Well, I got to tell you, you know, it's going to sound like we're being very negative about big box stores, about chain stores. We're going to be very negative about some of this development that's happened out here. But I got to say, it's almost lunchtime on our drive, and we're here at Chipotle. They're all over the place, Tom. They make a great burrito. Can we stop? You want to have a burrito?
Sure, why not?
Okay, we'll stop and have a burrito. We'll be right back. You can have a burrito, maybe three tacos, and throw it all in a bowl. I love Chipotle. I love Chipotle. Okay. Excellent. Well, thanks for stopping, guys. So we've got our Chipotle, and we're going to head on back down the road. We're driving here in Canton. I just have to make sure I'm watching as I back up, because there are a lot of cars in this shopping center. And of course, we stopped at Chipotle. We could have stopped at Panera Bread, which is right across the street, or a Ben & Jerry's. Maybe we'll stop on the way back. There are a couple locally owned businesses in here. There's
that's
Fang,
good.
An Asian bistro.
Yep.
So there's a few different places that aren't part of the big box continuum.
Yeah.
Okay, I've got a green light, so I'm going to merge back out onto 44, and that's always tough because people are moving fast. So now we're going to keep heading down. We've passed by these shops. We just saw the CVS that we built. We're actually going to encounter another CVS. And believe it or not, another Dunkin' Donuts in just a couple minutes. I guess one thing that I should ask you is, as we've seen these changes out here, is this happening all over Connecticut? I mean, is this
all over the country?
All over the country, really?
Sure. Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. This is that's why every place looks like every place else. And it is. You know, they're chains. You know, the store in Canton looks like the store in Spokane. Aesthetically degrades the environment. You know, where do you go? Ask yourself, where do you go on vacation? You go on vacations to places that are attractive. Well, why don't we build cities like that? But we don't. We build strip mall sprawl. Now, there's some good, you know, it's convenient. It supports the society that we have created. But there's a downside to it.
Here's something that always happens in Sprawlville. We've got somebody dressed in a cow costume outside. He's trying to sell something. I'm not quite sure what. It's out in front of Farmington Bank, waving to the people as they go by. Now, I can't get through this part of the drive without saying that there are a few great locally owned businesses that have been hanging on. We passed a little holistic foods place called Garden of Light that's been there for a very long time in one of these strip malls.
Yep.
And it's one of its kind. And at the end of the day, it faces pressures from places like Whole Foods.
Sure.
There's two of them in West Hartford where you live, and yeah. Garden of Light has a hard time competing, but they struggle to stay surviving. Well, they still do.
That's the challenge. I mean, the small locally owned businesses can, in some cases, survive. I mean, they call the big boxes category killers, you know, because, you know, often, for example, a huge big box hardware store will kill all the local small hardware stores. But, you know, if you can come back with good products and spectacular customer service, you can survive.
So now we're well into the town of Avon here. We've passed through Canton, Simsbury, and now we're in Avon. And it's a cute little town center. There's a church right in the center here, but of course, with Route 44 going through it, you can't really walk and cross over the street. But we get into a little cluster of stores down here that has some quaintness, and it's almost like a little village.
There's an effort to redesign it somewhat, too. I mean, having the all of this Route 44 traffic right through the middle of it, it does kind of take away from the quiet village green that might once have been here kind of attitude. And then just east of the center of Avon, you run into some strip mall development. Interestingly, there's a strip mall up here on the right, and there's a town rule, at least there was a couple of years ago, where they don't allow any neon.
Ah, okay.
So you can you can do this strip mall, but you can't have any neon in it.
Because neon would just ruin
the whole thing.
Yeah, you just can't possibly have neon. Tom Condon of the Hartford Courant, who's a deputy editorial page editor, and he's a student of sprawl. We've talked with him about sprawl and the way it's changed us over the years. And so we're taking a drive with the producer Tucker Ives from close to where I live, out in Winsted. We started in Canton, and we're driving up over Avon Mountain, and we're heading in now. As we're heading down this other side of the hill, and we're heading into West Hartford, things are going to change again, Tom, and it's going to be a little bit more residential, but we're coming up pretty quickly on the next big interesting piece of sprawl in our story, which is a corner we call Bishop's Corner. It's funny that we call it corner like it's a little street corner the kids used to hang out on. It's not really a corner at all. It's this amazing tangle of roads. Explain what Bishop's Corner is for people who aren't out here.
No, it's a Bishop's Corner was once a kind of a rustic four corner area many, many years ago that was developed in kind of a 60s style with gas stations on almost every corner on three of the four corners and auto-dominated malls around the area. So it's a very, it's a real suburban style development that is, again, it's hard to walk through. Even though it's surrounded by residences, not many people walk here. It's a difficult place to walk. There have been talk over the years about redesigning it. Parts of it have been redesigned, but it really needs, in my view, to be redesigned holistically. And
so, what would that take?
The hard part would be parcel assembling the land, because it's owned by a lot of different landowners. So it might be prohibitive. Might not be able to do it.
Sometimes, Tom, I'm glad you came on this drive with me, but look, I feel like I understand some of the solutions that you're talking about, but I also feel like I'm part of the problem. I can afford to live out in Winsted. I love living out in the country.
Sure.
Because of my job, I have to drive in. I might have to go out and cover a story. So it's sure. Very, very difficult for me, but I see so many people like myself sitting by themselves in a car waiting at traffic lights, and I wonder, am I part of what's wrong?
In a sense, yes. But when you have to drive for work, it is... You have to drive for work. Until we can recreate real density. But it's a challenge. In Manhattan, 85% of the people get to work either on transit or on foot. But there's no place else in the country even close. As the Farmington Valley develops, we really need to think about transit alternatives, which is why, biking is not, if we can get a series of bike paths, people will use them, and that'll help a little bit. But it's really one of the challenges the area faces.
Well, as we pull into our parking lot here, there's parking for plenty of cars here.
Yes.
I think that our place was built so that people would drive. And I want to thank my guest, Tom Condon, from the Hartford Courant. And I'll tell you what, Tom, why don't you stick around after this break? You can come back and we'll get inside the studio and we'll take some calls from listeners. Sound good?
Terrific.
This is Where We Live. I'm John Dankosky. Today we're talking about retail sprawl, how chain stores have taken over our landscapes. And as we'll hear, not just in the suburbs, but we want to hear from you. Do you worry about how many Dunkin' Donuts dot our cities and towns? Do you like the convenience that the big chains provide? 860-275-7266. You can email us wherewelive@wnpr.org, or you can tweet us at wherewelive. We just took a drive down Route 44, my daily commute, with Tom Condon, a columnist and deputy editorial page editor for the Hartford Courant. Good to have you in studio, Tom.
Thank you, John.
So we just listened to that ride. I want to read for you a couple of emails we got from people. Luther says, two Rite Aids and two CVS stores about 2 miles apart in Cheshire. Kate in West Hartford points out that in your hometown of,
sure.
of West Hartford, five CVSs, two Stop and Shops, two Whole Foods, and too many Dunkin' Donuts to even count. It is all over the place, but people do like them. There's an awful lot of convenience there. I mean,
sure.
I've been thinking about this a lot. Is it such a bad thing to have so many big chains?
No, it's not. The chains by themselves, are part of the evolution of retail, and they aren't necessarily a bad thing. But they often it's often the design that's the problem. I mean, you get some chain pharmacies will come into an urban area and just put in a whole lot of pavement and a drive-through and can ruin the walking environment. So part of the challenge is to work these things into a sensible, well-designed, aesthetically pleasing urban environment. And there's a CVS in West Hartford Center that doesn't have a drive-through, fits into a row of stores, and is perfectly fine. And I patronize it.
And you patronize it. Well, of course, another thing that I was thinking about as we got done with our ride is that we went by that one area in Canton where there was an old golf course, and we talked about the shops going in there. And I thought about that for a while. And one argument can be made that while it was beautiful to have that patch of green on the drive, and it was nice to break up that sprawl, maybe developing heavily along well-traveled roads allows us to not develop quite so heavily in other places that are going to stay more pristine. By saying, this is going to be a commercial thoroughfare, let's build it up, it maybe allows us to have some more, I don't know, nicer areas elsewhere in town.
Well, that's the hope. I would argue that we should take it one more step and have pods of development along the road, not simply develop the whole road. Then you don't get that, one thing, you don't get the dangerous traffic situation of people pulling in and out all the time. I mean, there was, life wasn't any worse when the golf course was there, but they needed the property tax revenue. And I think that it all over the state drives a lot of questionable or bad land use decisions. What often happens is that the rest of the places get developed as well. So you don't get that effect.
We also got notes from Peter here who says, if we ever have to turn all the Dunkin' Donuts into survival shelters for a post-apocalyptic world, the entirety of New England will be saved. Well, that's one way to look at it. And Mike writes, up until a few years ago, Waterbury had two Friendlies within sight of one another on opposite sides of the highway. Of course, Friendlies took care of that. There are hardly any Friendlies anymore.
Right.
We got a tweet from Mark in New Haven. We've got 30 independent coffee shops within three blocks of the office, 5 Dunkin' Donuts, but why would you ever go to them? And Rob also says, my daily 5-mile commute, I pass 5 Dunkin' Donuts in 3 Subway sandwich shops. Every once in a while, some of us do stop at these things. One more here. Matt in Buffalo decides to tweet in. He lived in Hartford. He lives in Buffalo now. I passed 3 Starbucks on my way and several thousand Tim Hortons.
That's the
local version. Yeah. I want to go to David Giles, who joins us by phone. He's research director at the Center for an Urban Future in New York City. They put out a report called State of the Chains, which looks at chain stores in the Big Apple. And David, we wanted to bring you in because we're so worried about this being a suburban phenomenon, but big chain stores are taking over the city too.
That's right. Yeah, no, we're seeing a lot of growth in the number of chain stores in New York City. We've been taking tallies of chain stores for the last 5 years, and we've seen hundreds and hundreds of new stores.
Well, so hundreds of new stores, are they popping up because they're in locations where they're going to work, where people really want them? They want to be just around the corner from another Subway?
Well, you have different chains exploiting different markets in New York City. So, you guys have been talking about Dunkin' Donuts and Subway, and those two retailers are really in a league of their own in New York. Dunkin' Donuts has about 484 stores in the city. Subway has 454. And Starbucks is number 3 on our list with about 272 stores. So those guys are way ahead of everyone else. But, we've been seeing a lot of different trends. So in Manhattan, we have more upscale establishments like Chipotle and Chopped and Potbelly really serving the worker lunch crowd. They've been expanding significantly in Manhattan, but not in the other boroughs. You have a lot of tax service retailers like Liberty and Jackson Hewitt. Those guys have been really growing rapidly in the other boroughs outside of Manhattan and really kind of moving into lower scale, poorer neighborhoods in the city.
Well, one of the interesting things, and I think one of the people who emailed us just brought this up, David, it's this idea that in a lot of places in America, when there's a suburban development and they put in a Starbucks, people there say, you know what, maybe I don't love having another chain store here, but it's the first decent cup of coffee I could get in years. In New York City, you're around the corner from a million places that you could get a decent cup of coffee. You don't need another Starbucks. How does this all play out? I mean, at the end of the day, are the chains taking away business from the local retail establishments, or is there a need for Starbucks because Manhattanites really, really need that fix too?
It's a good question. I don't know if there's a need like there may be in other parts of the country. Certainly, we have a lot of local businesses, a lot of local coffee shops. In New York City, we have this beloved institution of corner bodegas. We have thousands of bodegas in the city, but we have 7-Elevens now popping up, kind of taking over the bodega market. The bodegas, I think, we're doing fine, but 7-Eleven has abilities. They have an economy of scale that they can exploit. They can offer consumer objects for cheaper than the bodegas can, and they can do it better. The people don't need these services, but the chain stores are really good at providing them with products that are cheaper and doing it better, I think, than a lot of the local retailers.
The example that David just gave, Tom Condon, is, I think, a very, very good one. You talked earlier about category killers, the chains coming in and saying, we can do this better, cheaper, faster, and we'll just take out all the bodegas.
Yeah, no, as no question. There are some bodegas in Hartford and that are popular in neighborhoods, but nothing like New York. And yeah, they can do that. And can the local guys respond? In some contexts, they can, with good products and good customer service. So in my opinion, the great asset Dunkin' Donuts has is its coffee. Dunkin' Donuts coffee is terrific. So
we might disagree on that, Tom.
Well, in your view,
and in the view of obviously a lot of other people. And I will say too, I know you wrote about this in The Current a couple of years ago when it went in down in the Frog Hollow neighborhood.
Sure.
There's a storefront that has sort of run down, and who redeveloped the storefront in a really attractive way right across from your building at the Hartford Current, but Dunkin' Donuts.
Absolutely, absolutely, and that was. Interestingly, and this is something cities can do, that was because Hartford passed a historic preservation ordinance. And the building that it was in, which is a 100-year-old, small 100-year-old commercial building, was fit in under the ordinance. So instead of tearing it down and putting up a generic, bland, mindless architectural tragedy, they rehabbed the building, and it is beautiful. And it's the kind of thing that cities can and should do. You have an architectural heritage, save it.
Let's go to Ed, who's calling from Middletown. Hi, Ed, go ahead.
Hey, John. We're having a situation in Middletown where developers are trying to bring the sprawl style, big parking lots, drive-throughs, into the urban neighborhoods, and a group of us are fighting it pretty severely. But it's a problem that, people are so used to that style that developers want to bring it closer to we have a thriving Main Street, and this would be three blocks from our thriving Main Street. So we see it as a problem here.
And it's being driven by developers who see an opportunity, Ed, right?
Exactly. it's on a busy street on Route 66. 22,000 cars pass every day. That's, dollar signs in their eyes. So they want to build there. They want to knock down historic homes to do it, too.
That's a terrible development. That's a terrible proposal.
You know about this
one,
Tom.
Right. I know about it. Yeah, it really is something that really needs more attention. This happened in Hartford, in the south end of Hartford. There was a 100-year-old building that had Pippi's restaurant and then Carmichael's. You know, the nice brick building. Yeah. Tore it down. Generic CVS, big front field parking lot, which I don't think in its history has ever been full or even half full. And part of the problem is with the chains will contract with developers who build this standard suburban design, even in an urban context. And that's what needs to be stopped. They don't have to do that. Big boxes don't have to be in big boxes. I mean, and interestingly, when Governor Malloy was mayor of Stamford, he directed some big boxes to go into the city, into the center of the city. So Target in Stamford is in a five-story building that you can walk to, and there's a Burlington Coat Factory across the street. So if you want to put this stuff into a decent, livable urban context, you can.
Well, and David, maybe you can talk about that in New York, because obviously, you know, you're not knocking down skyscrapers to build a one-story Walgreens in the city. How is the big box style retail fitting into the Manhattan landscape and that of the other boroughs?
Well, yeah, it's right. You have Home Depot on 14th Street in Manhattan. They're not in a big box, obviously. They're in a very urban building, a dense neighborhood. We've got, you know, Targets sprouting up in the outer boroughs with, you know, that are very well connected to transit. But we've got sprawl in New York City too. The zip code in New York with the most chain stores is in Staten Island, actually Southern Staten Island, where the Staten Island Mall is. It's got almost 200 chain stores in that one zip code. We have malls in the outer boroughs. But you're right. In Manhattan, the big box retailers have learned to operate out of different establishments, different buildings.
Let's go to Sherry in West Hartford. Hi there, Sherry. Go ahead. You're on Where We Live.
Hi. I just wanted to make three points. One of them is that the reason that we have the chain store pharmacies popping up all over, there's just near where I work, there's a corner that has three national chain pharmacies on the same corner. And within a mile, there are other branches of those, is that the markup is incredibly high on prescriptions. So there's a tremendous profit margin there. If you look at one point, I was given a discount because of professional status by the pharmacist on prescriptions that I purchased for my family. It was one-tenth of the list price at a CVS or at a Rite Aid, what he gave me. So it's because there is so much profit to be made there that even if there's relatively little foot traffic into the place because there are three on one corner, still there's enough profit to justify having a pharmacy on every block.
Mm.
The second thing is that the same thing with Dunkin' Donuts. A franchise owner buys the right to establish Dunkin' Donuts within a certain area, and because there's a very high profit margin on what he sells, he's going to put one every mile.
Well, and Sherry, what's your third point quickly?
The third point is that, and I realize that you acknowledged this at the end of your discussion during your drive, but it's kind of elitist to say, I want to live far away from where I work in order to live in a rural area, and I want to live along what was never intended to be a commuter road into Hartford. 44 was intended as a secondary route. It was one lane wide in most directions until fairly recently.
Absolutely. And Sherry, you make the point that I've been making, and I think about it a lot. And Tom Kahn and you and I have talked about this.
Sure.
A lot of people in Connecticut are making some of these choices. As I think I said during our drive, when I started looking for a house 15 years ago or whatever, I couldn't afford to live in West Hartford or Avon or Canton. I just kept going outside the city. It ended up way out there.
You drive till you can buy. it's sort of the pattern around the country, and it is imperative that there be affordable housing in town centers and transit available areas. That is essential. Affordable housing is a real problem in Connecticut, and the lack of it is one of the things that drives all of this commuting traffic.
But you're a new urbanist, Tom. You're fighting for all this density. Look, you've got David Giles there in Manhattan, and he's taking a look at that. There couldn't be a greener place by some standards than Manhattan. Everyone's using public transportation, but the cost of living is so high, even with all this density, it's very, very difficult to actually live there, and they still have chain store sprawl.
Oh yeah, well the one isn't necessarily connected to the other. Chain stores are a retail model now, and as we've seen, they can go into a good urban context. It's not the path of least resistance, and which is the one they usually take, but it can happen. But the challenge is to create the good urban context.
Well,
I have to chime in, though,
yeah, please.
And say that even in the sort of denser neighborhoods of Manhattan, the chain stores do create problems with the diversity of retail or lack of diversity of retail. So, you know, I live in a very diverse neighborhood, and we have three Rite Aids within walking distance of us, a CVS and two Duane Reades. So we have a lack of diversity, too. We have the bank the bank branches and bank tellers, the automated teller machines that take up a whole retail storefront. It can be a problem here too.
Well, and David, before I let you go, who's fighting back against this? Because as our earlier caller said, look, there's plenty of money to be made by the model that's there. Developers like to have certainty. So if there's a choice between putting a small local company in one of their storefronts and putting a known commodity like a chain store in, they're probably going to opt for the chain store. Who's fighting back against this? Is there any movement against this sort of chain sprawl in Manhattan?
There's been some talk about what city government can do to encourage local businesses. There's been some talk, for instance, on the Upper West Side about limiting the size of storefronts so that the big drug stores won't move in or can't move in because they can't fit in the smaller storefronts. But there's been pushback against that because it would have unintended consequences, as you might imagine. But there has been no solution yet. It's still a problem, particularly with the banks and drug stores. So I think we're still sort of struggling to figure out what to do about it.
David, let me just ask you this. I mean, when you talk about lack of diversity, I'm inferring is that you're saying there are too many of one kind of store and not enough of another. I know in the Upper West Side, they've lost a lot of like butcher shops and these kind of one-off neighborhood shops, and there are a lot of branch banks and branch pharmacies. Is that the gist?
Yeah, that's it. I mean, it's the delis and the grocery stores
yeah.
and the bodegas. They've been replaced by the same drug stores,
right.
Block after block, and banks block after block. And the banks are a particular problem because they close at 4. Those are empty areas. When you have too many banks on one block, the block empties out. It's not a good urban trend.
Absolutely. So the trick would be then to get a diversity of retail in a particular commercial area.
Right.
Well, a challenge, a real challenge.
It is a real challenge. David Giles has been following this. He's research director at the Center for an Urban Future in New York City. They put out a report called State of the Chains, which looks at chain stores in the Big Apple. We're tweeting out a link to that study right now. David, thanks so much for joining us. I appreciate it.
Thank you.
When we come back, we're going to continue our conversation with Tom Condon of the Hartford Courant. We're talking about chain stores in sprawl across Connecticut and America. We'll talk about how transportation has changed all this. Are people actually starting to drive less in Connecticut? You can join the conversation, 860-275-7266. This is where we live. This is Where We Live. I'm John Dankosky. Coming up tomorrow, the influence of money and power is always getting in the way of democracy, it seems. Political compromise can water down our ideals, leading to no real change at all. So many young voters ask, why do we bother with government at all? Join us for a conversation with a group of special guests in our studio, a civics class from Bulkley High School in Hartford. What can we do to get people engaged, especially young people? What can we learn about better government from students? That's our conversation tomorrow here on Where We Live. Today, we're talking about suburban and urban sprawl, the big chain stores that have popped up everywhere. Do you pass 5 Dunkin' Donuts on the way to work like I do? Give us a call at 860-275-7266. Tom Condon from the Hartford Courant is a columnist and deputy editorial page editor. In just a moment, we're going to be talking about transportation in the state. But first, let's go to Alana in Hartford. Hi, Alana.
Hi. As aesthetically and environmentally abominable as sprawl is, it often provides the most accessible shopping experience for people with mobility disabilities. The charming, quirky shop is often not accessible, cannot be made accessible. I'm a strong preservationist myself, but this is really the underside of preservation. And I think it is important to realize that these environments, the sprawl environments, tend to be the most accessible environments. I'm not sure it has to be there, but I think it's an important element of the discussion.
I think you raise a very good point, Alana.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah. Many old quaint shops can be made accessible with a little work, and as the ADA requires. So yeah, it's a good point.
Let's go to Stephen, who's on a cell phone. Hi, Stephen.
Hi, how are you?
Doing well. What's up?
I just wanted to make a comment. I happen to be an environmental economist, so I think about these things a little, maybe a little differently than some. But
yeah.
We all, including myself, want to get out, buy a piece of undeveloped farm or forest land and stick our house on it. And then we get a little bit cranky when we start seeing the sprawl happening and the more Dunkin' Donuts coming in, which I just had breakfast at Dunkin' Donuts. We don't think about necessarily enough about public policies that can help the owners of undeveloped land make the decision to keep it undeveloped, whether it's supporting local land trusts or buying local foods to help farmers make a little bit better living off the land. We think about those things. We have Connecticut growing in this state as an ag label for local products, but we really probably need more direct kinds of programs that can affect the bottom line of the landowners that are making the choice between keeping it undeveloped or turning it into a strip mall.
I think and Stephen, you make such a great point, and I'm glad you called because you do think about these things professionally. We have, Tom Condon, preserved an awful lot of open space over the course of the last 20 years. There's been a big push in the state to do that. But as you and I have talked about a number of times, as long as we have the property tax system we have, that sort of thing's not going to change.
No, and many towns also have very primitive zoning. So the only way, in most cases, to preserve open space is to buy it or to buy development rights to it. Now, there are two state programs that are aimed to preserving open space and a separate one for farmland. They're making progress. There are some, some nonprofit private entities, the Working Lands Alliance, and some others, and many local land trusts, who also are engaged in preserving open space for future generations. What we really need in this state, in so many respects, is some good planning. In other words, what's left? What do we want to save? What's important to save? Where are the wildlife habitats, the ecosystems? And we don't do very good planning in this state. So, there is a DEP green plan, and that's a step in the right direction. But we really need to do that. We need to open space is dwindling. There's a finite amount of land in Connecticut.
And at a certain point, it will be developed. River's calling from Hartford. Hi, River. Go ahead.
Hi. Good morning, gentlemen.
Good morning.
Good morning.
John, I was mostly calling to commiserate because I've been doing the similar commute to you, although not quite as long. I've been driving out to Canton for the past about 6 years in the reverse direction from you. And the 40, that stretch of 44 from Canton to Hartford is absolutely horrible for a daily commute. So, I'm impressed that you do an even longer one.
I don't know how impressed you should be. This is the thing. I'm second guessing this every moment I spend with Tom Condon.
You are the traffic.
I know.
Yeah, absolutely. And it's ironic that so many of us do this, and yet I think a lot of these workers doing this commute are working in industries that are information based and technology based, and I think there's probably a lot more ability for telecommuting, remote working, et cetera, then we're taking advantage of. I know in my job, there certainly is. I probably could have been commuting about half that time or less if there were more flexibility around that.
And River, thank you for calling. First of all, and I think you raise a good point, and I've been telling my producers for years, I would love to do the show from my house, from my bedroom. I don't know if that'll happen anytime soon. I want to go quickly, actually, to Abe Scar, who's director of the Connecticut Public Interest Research Group. And one of the things you've been looking at, Abe, is whether or not people are actually driving less. Is there more telecommuting happening in Connecticut? What have we found, Abe?
Yes, and thanks for having me on, John. We released a report yesterday, A New Direction, which looks at driving trends across the country, which are the same here in Connecticut, which is that people are driving less. The driving boom that we saw from the end of World War II through 2004, where there was a steady increase of driving every year throughout that time, it has stopped, and a mix of demographic change and workforce participation and really the rise of the millennial generation, which lots of surveys and studies are showing want to be driving less, is leading to people driving less and looking for new options for transportation.
When you say new options for transportation, does this mean that people are, as River was suggesting, spending more time working from home or some other location and not driving into work, or is it really about more use of public transportation?
It's both. So certainly the rise of mobile technology has opened up the opportunity for people to work from home, but also to use public transportation in new ways, whether it's being able to see real-time information about public transportation or to do work while you commute, which you can do while you're using public transportation, but you can't by driving. Millennials in particular are looking for public transportation options and looking to live in walkable communities that don't depend on driving.
So, Tom Condon, why do you think that this is happening? I mean, again, a lot of these numbers, they seem to be getting better just after or around an economic downturn. I mean, does that have something to do with it? Are we driving less because we can afford to drive less, Tom?
Well, no, I think that's definitely been a factor. I mean, there has, Abe's right, across the country, a decline in annual miles driven for the first time since the end of World War II. And it's partly... transit ridership is up, so I think it's fair to infer that one of the things people are doing is taking trains and buses. Problem in Connecticut is that we have been kind of slow to improve our transit. I mean, we have a bus system that's not quite as good as Ecuador's. For decades, the DOT has treated the bus system as a welfare program. Not as an asset, not as a transit program, not as something that can help sell the state, but it is all that, and places around the country, bus rapid transit is taking its place with trains and moving more people. Moving everyone in a sole occupied car is a really stupid way to move people.
I have to ask you, we just have a little bit of time left. Abe, do we know anything about, are people using bikes more? Because Tom Condon wants people to get on bikes. Do we know anything about bike usage?
I don't know specific data on bike usage. In general, as our report found, people are using alternative transportation more. Transit ridership is up, and I believe that includes biking and walking. I don't have anything more, detailed numbers on that.
We'll take a closer look to Abe Scar, director of the Connecticut Public Interest Research Group. Thank you so much for joining us for a few minutes, Abe.
Thank you.
Now, so Tom Condon, the reason I bring that up is on my drive in this morning, we took that drive that we heard a couple days ago, and I was driving in this morning, and the traffic slowed way down in the right-hand lane. I wasn't quite sure why, and it turned out that there was a guy struggling mightily to bike along with traffic. Almost no road off to the side, no room for him at all, and cars were swerving around him, and I feared for this guy's life. I gave him a lot of credit for biking in. Not everyone's going to be able to bike to work, but it seems like even just making that little piece of the road safer for people who can would be such a huge improvement, and that's just something I noticed immediately right after our conversation.
I hope he had a will. Great admiration for someone who do that. What I'd like to see is making biking to work safer, creating, as a lot of cities have, lanes for bikes and buses. A lot of Manhattan now has. New York is in the midst of building 900 miles of bike lanes. Chicago is making itself a tremendously bike-friendly city. Why can't we? People all over the world commute by bikes. In the Netherlands, like 39% of people commute to work by bike. The highest number in the United States, I think, is 7% in Portland.
My goodness. Well, Tom Condon, thank you so much for joining us. First of all, for that drive, we had a delicious burrito along the way.
And
I'm trying to rethink my traffic usage patterns. It seems as though I've seen the traffic and I am it. Yes. Tom, thank you so much.
Thank you, John.
Tom Condon from the Hartford Courant. We want to end with an email from Gina who says, in 2011, I traveled to Chilean Patagonia for my honeymoon to experience a new world and a different culture. Lo and behold, we deboard the aircraft only to find a Dunkin' Donuts in the airport in Santiago, Chile. Much to my dismay, you cannot escape Dunkin' Donuts. My friends and I refer to it as the New England plague. Well, thank you, Gina, for that. I'm sure a lot of you are listening to the show and drinking your Dunkin' Donuts this morning. You can continue this conversation online. Go to WNPR.org, keyword where. Our program is produced by Tucker Eyes with Heather Brandon, Betsy Kaplan, and Samaya Hernandez. The senior producer is Katie Tolarski. Thanks today to Rusty Fisher and Jules Lefebvre. John Dankowski here. This is Where We Live.